The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, Upfront, What We Know Now, Scarlett Johansson and June Squibb. After directing Squibb in a new film and becoming her good friend in the process, Johansson chats with her fellow Oscar nominee about memory, grief, and late life success. Earlier this year at the Cannes Film Festival, audiences celebrated an auspicious intergenerational pairing. The actress Scarlett Johansson, Lost in Translation, Marriage Story, Yo-Yo Rabbit, 40, directing the legendary June Squibb, Nebraska, Thelma, 95, in Eleanor the Great. Along with themes of aging, loss, and Holocaust survivorship, the film explores a friendship between two characters with big age differences, Squibb's Eleanor and a 20-year-old woman. We invited Johansson to interview Squibb for us about her work and her life's wisdom. Here's what they had to say. Johansson, when we were working on Eleanor the Great, you worked all day, every day. You got bronchitis in the middle and still powered through. After a career on the stage, you started working in film at 61 and have been at it for more than 30 years. How do you prepare for your work day? Is it different than 30 years ago? Squibb, I don't think it is so different. I've always had an energy surge when I needed it. When I was doing theater and musicals, I had it, and I still do. I put myself into a gear, and off I go, and I know the script completely. Johansson, you know every line of your character before you even start? That's crazy. Where did your work ethic come from? Squibb, the Cleveland Playhouse. I was 19. They pounded it into you. You did this. You did not do this. So when I went to New York, Broadway, in the late 50s, I took all of that with me. It's a decorum, a way of treating people, of treating your costume, everything. What I learned at the Playhouse is so much a part of me now. Johansson, how did you end up pivoting to film? Squibb, I went to my agent and I said, I think I should be doing some film work. A week later, I had an audition with Woody Allen, and that was the first film I did. Alice, I just fell in love with him, and the job went on for a long time. I remember my agent said, there's a possibility of another job, and I said, I can't take another job. I have to be there for Woody. Johansson, so suddenly, in your 60s, you have a whole new career. Squibb, my second film was Scent of a Woman, with Martin Brest, and I think it all kind of changed then. I felt, I really want to do this. I did Scorsese's The Age of Innocence, then I did In and Out, a comedy. Johansson, if you could go back and do it again, would you have started working in films when you were younger? Squibb, nope. I think it happened exactly the way it was supposed to. I remember my years in the theater with great love and joy. Johansson, what moved you about the Eleanor script when you first read it? Squibb, the whole Holocaust thing. I was a kid during the Second World War, and remember Life magazine when they found the camps, the photos. It was so horrific to me that somebody could do this to another human. I remember it vividly, and this was 80 years ago. Johansson, later you converted to Judaism. Squibb, it was a long time in Cleveland. The temple was near the playhouse, and I met with the rabbi two or three times a week. We really dug each other, and would go off on tangents talking about the world, what we thought, everything. He would say, June, we have to get back to Judaism. So we did. And I'll tell you, I knew more than my husband ever knew about Judaism. The rabbi who married us was very proud of me. Now, I did get a Jewish divorce, which was horrible, but going into it was great. Parentheses, Squibb remarried and then was widowed after a 40-year marriage. Johansson. Your character, the Eleanor in Eleanor, has a close friendship with a Holocaust survivor who dies suddenly. So Eleanor more or less assumes her friend's identity and tells her Holocaust story. One of the themes is, if the person is not there to tell their own story, can we tell them for it? Squibb. The world has to know. Eleanor believes that, and she has that line when she says, it's not a real lie, it's not hurting anyone, so it's okay. Johansson. Eleanor has outlived a husband and best friend, and now she's sort of this invisible person. Grief and ageism are themes that are uncomfortable for a lot of people. Squibb. But I think more people are, if not talking about it, thinking about it. I think we have much more interest in age now than we've ever had, because we're an aging society. Living into your 90s is nothing these days. We're looking at a future where the country will be full of older people, and we'll have to find out how to handle it, which I don't think this country does that well. Johansson, society doesn't handle it well? Squibb, I think we're learning. For example, the knowledge we're getting about retirement homes, different levels of retirement, that it's not just black or white. We're becoming more aware. The culture is shifting. Johansson, Eleanor has a special friendship with a 20-something character, Aaron. What do you get out of friendships with people much younger than you? Squibb. I learned a lot about what's happening in the world through younger people that I would never know, but regardless of age differences, it's the same relationship that I would have with anyone. Johansson. What do you wish you could have told your 20-year-old self when you were starting out? Squibb. Don't listen to other people. Have people around you believe in and trust, but make your own decisions. I will think about what people say, but people in general making statements about what you should or shouldn't do, that's destructive. Johansson. You're turning 96 in November. What else do you want to do? Squibb. I've guest starred on TV shows, but I've never done a series. Johansson. If an opportunity came up to star in something again, would you be up for it? Squibb. Oh, yes. Physically, there would have to be things thought about. I couldn't be just June runs in and out of a room. But yeah, I think I would be up for it. Now let's go to AARP, the bulletin. Your money. Tax law changes you need to know about. Recent legislation affects returns for 2025 and later. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act, signed by President Donald Trump on July 4th, makes multiple changes to the tax code. Some are temporary and some are permanent. Some could reduce your tax bill for 2025, while others go into effect for the 2026 tax year. These are some of the provisions most likely to affect older adults. Bigger deductions. Prior to the OBBB's passage, the 2025 standard deduction for people who don't itemize deductions on their returns, about 90% of taxpayers, was set at $15,000 for individual taxpayers and $30,000 for married couples filing jointly. The new law increased those deductible amounts. For 2025, the standard deduction is now $15,750 for individual filers and $31,500 for joint. The previously announced additional standard deduction for people over 65 and older remains $2,000 for singles and $1,600 per qualifying spouse for couples filing jointly. From 2025 through 2028, you may get an extra break if you're 65 or older. You can claim a bonus deduction on your taxes of up to $6,000 per eligible individual, even if you don't itemize. The new deduction delivers tax relief at a time when many older Americans are living on fixed incomes while facing rising costs. Nancy LeMond, AARP's chief advocacy and engagement officer, wrote in a June 29th letter to Senate leaders. Individuals with a modified adjusted gross income, MAGI, of up to $75,000 and joint filers with incomes of up to $150,000 can deduct the full $6,000. The deduction phases out at higher incomes and goes away if your MAGI, your Maggie, exceeds $175,000 or $250,000 for a couple. For purposes of this and other tax changes, your MAGI is your adjusted gross income found on line 11 of Form 1040, plus certain added back deductions such as IRA contributions. The new law allows borrowers of all ages to deduct up to $10,000 annually in car loan interest payments through the 2028 tax year. There are some caveats, however. The loan must have originated on January 1st of this year or later, and the vehicle must be a new car, minivan, van, SUV, pickup truck, or motorcycle that underwent final assembly at a U.S. factory. That's January 1st of 2025. If your MAGI is greater than $100,000 individually or $200,000 couple filing jointly, the deduction tapers off by $200 for every $1,000 of additional income. Many SUVs and trucks meet the assembly requirement, says Ronald Montoya, manager of consumer advice at the car shopping guide Edmunds.com. This includes models like the Honda Pilot, Toyota Highlander, and Ford F-150. If you have a car's vehicle identification number, a VIN, you can visit the government website nhtsa.gov/VIN-decoder to check. The safest bet is to look up the VIN number, says Montoya, but the assembly information is also on a car's window sticker at the dealership. Starting with tax year 2018, people who itemized could deduct no more than $10,000 in state and local tax, SALT, or SALT payments, on their federal return. The new law temporarily increases the limit to $40,000 for taxpayers with a MAGI below $500,000. The provision could provide significant savings for homeowners who live in states and communities with high property taxes and property values. Older Americans are more likely to be in this group. While 65% of all U.S. adults own their homes, the rates rise to about 76% of people aged 55 to 64 and nearly 79% of those 65 and older, according to recent Census Bureau data. The SALT deduction cap and income threshold will increase by 1% a year until 2030, when, under the new law, it reverts to $10,000. Effective this year through 2028, employees and self-employed people who can deduct or can deduct up to $25,000 of tip income received in occupations the IRS deems to be customarily and regularly receiving tips. Among the people expected to qualify are restaurant workers, dog walkers, tutors, companions for older people, and taxi and rideshare drivers. Workers with qualified overtime pay in 2025 through 2028 will be able to deduct the portion of that pay that exceeds their regular pay rate. For example, the half portion of their time and a half hourly wage. The deduction maxes out at $12,500, $25,000 if married and filing jointly. Even if you have deductible tip or overtime income, the money is still subject to FICA taxes for Medicare and Social Security. The tip and overtime deductions start phasing out for individuals whose MAGI is $150,000, $300,000 if married and filing jointly. Married taxpayers who file separately do not qualify. Karen Anderson, Vice President of Tax Compliance Solutions at Wolters McClure recommends keeping a record of the time and amount of tips received. Documentation is key, she said. Starting with tax year 2026, people who don't itemize can deduct up to $1,000, $2,000 if married and filing jointly, for qualified charitable cash contributions. A more expansive version of the $300 COVID-era deduction that non-itemizers could take for tax years 2020 and 2021. The provision does not extend to the donation of physical goods like clothing and housewares. For taxpayers who do itemize deductions, the bill allows a deduction for charitable contributions only if they exceed 0.5% of their adjusted gross income. For example, if your AGI is $100,000, the first $500 of charitable contributions is not deductible. And finally, if in order for you to work or look for work, you have to pay a caregiver to look after a child under 13, a spouse or a disabled dependent who lives with you, you may be eligible for what the IRS calls the Child and Dependent Care Credit. This credit applies to up to $3,000 in expenses for one qualifying individual and $6,000 for two or more of them. Starting in 2026, that credit rises to a maximum of 50% of qualified expenses if your AGI is $15,000 or less, up from 35%. The rate or the credit diminishes at higher incomes. If your employer offers a flexible spending account, letting you designate pre-tax income for dependent care, you'll be able to contribute up to $7,500 in 2026 for qualifying child care and elder care expenses, up from $5,000. And the sidebar is more help with caregiving and housing. Other parts of the OBBB Act don't directly affect individuals' tax bills, but could have financial ramifications for family caregivers and homeowners. These include an enhanced business tax credit for family leave. The new law extends and expands provisions of the 2017 measure that offers tax breaks to employers that provide paid family and medical leave. The credit, which was set to expire at the end of 2025, is now permanent, and starting in 2026, employers can offer it to workers after 6 months of employment. Previously, the minimum tenure for qualifying was a year. The expanded credit provides important support to employers whose workers are juggling jobs and caregiving responsibilities. More housing tax credits. According to a 2025 AARP survey, nearly 4 in 5 adults age 50 and older support tax credits to increase investment in housing for low and moderate income Americans. The new law expands the low income housing tax credit, a federal incentive for developers to build and renovate affordable housing. Among other steps, the law extends an increase in federal allocations to the states for disbursing the credits and makes it easier for builders and investors to qualify. With the growing number of older adults struggling to find safe and affordable housing, these investments are timely and essential. However, don't support all of the new law. AARP didn't support all of the new law. AARP remains opposed to other provisions in this bill that will make life harder for older adults who are trying to get by, including cuts to Medicaid, Marketplace health coverage, and food assistance. Now let's look at an article under Fraud Watch. Celebrity imposter scams are rising. Here's how to protect yourself. The scam that cost Linda C., in Massachusetts, nearly $100,000, started on social media and fed on her desire from excitement in her life. For Linda, that meant reaching out to the actor James Spader, whom she enjoyed watching on the NBC crime thriller series The Blacklist, on what looked like his Instagram account. To her surprise, Spader responded. Over time, they traded emails. Linda, 66, initially sensed red flags, but when the scammer sent her a picture of Spader in jeans and a golf shirt, she believed it was legit, even against her natural skepticism, a state that scam experts called going under the ether. She was on the threshold of a so-called celebrity imposter scam, in which criminals lure victims by setting up fake accounts and impersonating famous actors, authors, business icons, and other celebrities on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, and other social media sites. When fans like Linda reach out or comment on the scammer's social media post, the imposters respond, slowly establishing a predatory relationship that includes high-pressure asks for money, often deposited as cryptocurrency. Over the next year, Linda's communication with her scammer moved to texts and phone calls, and the asks escalated, including a $10,000 loan to pay for a vacation together. Why would a rich and famous actor need a loan? His money was controlled by his management team, the scammer explained. He was supposed to come pick me up and go to the airport, says Linda, who now knows she was talking to a scammer who is likely based overseas. I was all packed and ready to go. That's how real I thought this was. Amy Nofsinger, who directs the victim support hotline at the AARP Fraud Watch Network, says celebrity scams are on the rise. She recently heard from 5 victims in a single day. Financial losses from these scams can be devastating, but Nofsinger says the emotional damage is also painful. She recently talked to a woman whose husband filed divorce papers because he believed he was going to marry Jennifer Aniston. So why does an implausible scam work so well? The criminals can tell a believable story that makes the victim feel special, Nofsinger says. Who doesn't want to be the person Brad Pitt falls in love with and plucks out of a normal life? Experts say artificial intelligence tools help scammers create persuasive celebrity photos and videos. In response to an AARP inquiry, the FBI said the best way to avoid being scammed is do not send money, gift cards, cryptocurrency, or other assets to anyone you solely met online or on the phone. Some learn that too late. Debbie L., 69, who lives in Louisiana, lost at least $11,000 to a Bob Dylan imposter, and she says she isn't even much of a fan. Debbie responded to a fake social media post about the Dylan biopic, a complete unknown, and came to believe that Dylan was in love with her. Looking back, Debbie says she was taken in by the idea that her life was becoming exciting and uncommon. You know, it was an adventure, she said. Actors who have been impersonated in scams, including Kevin Costner and Pitt, have released statements and warning information, warning their fans that they will never ask them for money. Matthew Hiltzik, Pitt's publicist, says it is extremely rare for celebrities to reach out to fans. Any outreach should be considered a scam attempt. The assumptions should be that any celebrity text or direct message is not real. LaQuish Q. Wright, a social media strategist whose clients include the actors Channing Tatum and Zac Efron, says taking down imposter social media accounts is now a large part of her job. She blocks scammers and reports fake profiles to social media platforms, but new fakes always appear. Tech companies are having some success battling imposters. Luke Aragoni is a co-founder of Loti AI, a technology company specializing in deep fake detection that flags and removes fake celebrity profiles. The country artist Lainey Wilson is a client, and Aragoni says Loti has taken down nearly 8,000 fake Wilson accounts. But for now, imposters are winning. Becky R. in Virginia is struggling to help her 71-year-old sister, who continues to be taken in by a scammer impersonating the Scottish actor Sam Heughan. known for his role in the time travel TV series Outlander. Becky's sister, who lives in Tennessee, relies on Social Security for her living expenses, and Becky has no idea how much money has been lost to scammers. She worries the situation will end with her sister penniless and in crisis. "We've been telling her from the get-go that it's a scam," said Becky, "and she just doesn't believe us." AARP was concealing the last names of people in this story to protect them from rebound scams in which crooks target known victims with new fraud attempts. The author, Joe Eaton, is an investigative reporter who writes about fraud and government waste for AARP. All right, we have a couple of minutes left. Looking at some more money-saving tips. The one we're on now is pet care. Rotate your pet food subscriptions. In addition to discounts on recurring orders for auto-shipped pet food, retailers may offer a bigger discount for first-time customers. PetSmart, for example, offers a 35% off your first auto-ship order, while Pet Supermarket offered customers 50% off select brands for initial auto-shipped delivery. Sign up for one, and then a few months later, switch to take advantage of another offer. Next, pay less for pet insurance. Many companies offer access to group pet insurance rates as a voluntary benefit to employees. If you don't work for a company, you may be able to access a discounted rate through your Costco or AAA membership. And AARP has a pet insurance discount through fetch@aarp.org/pet insurance. Focus on flea prevention. Talk to your vet about whether using a topical treatment or a pill makes sense for your pet. Staying on top of that can help you avoid not only costly vet bills, but also the expense of bringing an exterminator into your house, which can cost hundreds of dollars. Buy it used, a new section. Buy used books. You can't beat the 25 cents to $2 that libraries typically charge at their used book sales. But if you seek a specific title, you'll probably find it on a site like thriftbooks.com. AbeBooks.com or Amazon. Watch shipping costs. We found a book on one site for $3.99 plus $3.49 shipping. Well, folks, we have again run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I do hope you've enjoyed listening. Please join me next time. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.